So I'll start with some notation. All along, SL will be the category of soup lattices. That's complete lattices whose morphisms are the soup-preserving maps. Now, this is a closed monoidal category, and the the semigroups in it are called quantiles. Usually, I'll be using unital quantiles, so they're monoids in this category, and the homomorphisms are what you would expect. They're maps that preserve joins and multiplication and unit in the unital case. And the actions are the quantile modules, also unitary in the unital case. Sorry. If the unit is preserved. Now, the best way to present examples of quantiles is to take quotients of free quantiles, so I will describe quotients briefly. And we'll leave this over here. Now, a quotient, a nucleus on a quantile is what we call a closure operator satisfying this very simple property. When we do this, the set of fixed points of the closure operator becomes a quantile with multiplication given by the closure of the original multiplication, joins given by the closure of the original joins and unit, the closure of the unit. And then there's a surjective homomorphism from Q to this quantile, and all quotients arise like this. So the first example of a quantile is given from a monoid. You take the power set under pointwise multiplication, and that's a very obvious quantile. And now for getting other examples, I'll use the nuclei. And we start from any kind of R algebra, from where R is a commutative ring. And so if you take the power set of that, that's also a quantile using the multiplication in the algebra. And then there are various nuclei. If you take a subset and you generate the free the group, the Abelian group that it generates, you get a nucleus. So you get a quotient quantile there. And if you do it with R modules, you get another quotient, and so on. If you add a topology to it, then you have another series of quotients where you take closed subgroups or closed sub R modules, and so on. Now, in the same way that you define these things for quantiles, you can do it for modules. So this is all pretty much the same again. The nucleus on a module is just a closure operator with respect to which the action is always continuous. And so you get from any from a topological left module over a topological algebra, you take its power set and you get a module over the power set of the algebra, and so on and so on. So for each, for instance, for the closed sub R modules of M, you get a module over the quantile of closed sub R modules of A, and so on and so forth. Now, before getting to the motivation, I will still need to give another piece of terminology. And that is, I didn't think I needed this slide over there. For any quantile, we'll say that an element is left-sided if you multiply it on the left by anything, you get something below itself. So the obvious example is if you take, for instance, the Abelian subgroups of a ring R, a left-sided element is just the left ideal of the ring. Similarly, you define right-sided elements, two-sided elements, and so on. And you get these inclusions as quantiles, because all these things will be quantiles except that they don't usually have a unit. And these never have a unit. And besides, L of Q is a right module, and R of Q is a left module. Okay, so I will put this one on that side. And we'll now describe the motivation for the talk. So the question that I will be trying to answer is, when can we recover an algebra from a quantile sub A, where this is vague on purpose? I mean, it could be closed subspaces, could be sub R modules or anything. So from one of those quantiles, when can you recover the original ring from which you constructed them. Now, the motivation for this question is the idea that a quantile could provide a kind of spectrum in the point-free topology sense for an algebra. Now, this idea has been so far mostly pursued for C-star algebras, and the origin of the idea was to generalize the situation for commutative C-star algebras in which everything is very well behaved. So if you take a commutative C-star algebra and you take the closed ideals, this is just a topology of the spectrum, of the maximal spectrum of the algebra. So you actually have the well-known Gelfin duality, as it's called, between the compact regular locales and the commutative C-star algebras of the unit. This is an equivalence of categories. Now, one notices that I of A, so the closed ideals, are just the two-sided elements of this quantile sub C closed of A, so the closed subspaces of the C-star algebra. And the multiplication is just the intersection of ideals. So this means that there are, in the non-commutative case, there are actually two possible generalizations of the localic spectrum of the algebra, which is either to use IA again, but this is obviously not very informative because it's just the usual Jacobson topology on the algebra, or to use the left-sided elements or the right-sided elements, of course. So in the commutative case, both of these things, both of these quantiles are the locale of closed ideals. Now, one problem with this idea is that, well, there certainly is not an equivalence of categories in any sense, and first evidence of this is that one can have non-commutative C-star algebras for which these quantiles of left-sided elements are isomorphic. This is in a paper of Professor Kosicki and Tonenbosch in 1989, I think. Now, what Chris Mulvey proposed was to consider the whole quantile of all the closed subspaces, not just the closed left ideals, as being the spectrum of the algebra, and he called this max of A, as meaning that this is, in the non-commutative case, what stands for the maximal spectrum. So I will avoid this notation to avoid ambiguity, and instead write Q of A just for the quantile of A. So this will now, from now on, always be the quantile of closed subspaces, linear subspaces of the algebra A. So the first aim here is to show that this functor, it is a functor, is actually a complete invariant of the algebra. So if the two quantiles, QA and QB, are isomorphic, then A is isomorphic to B. And this seems to be surprising in a way. There's another piece of structure which I'll be using, and that is the involution of the algebra is, well, copied pointwise to Q of A. So we are working with involutive monoids in the category of suplattices. Now, given this result, one may wonder, well, is there a functor going backwards from quantiles to algebras? And this is the second part of the talk in which I'll discuss the possibility of finding an equivalence of categories between unital C-star algebras and certain quantiles. But as we will see, this is very much open-ended, and as if, well, somehow topology is resisting becoming non-commutative. So things really have problems. Right, so I will describe in as much detail as I can how one recovers a C-star algebra from the quantile. My hope is that this construction, even if not applied to any of the specific, well, Hopf algebras or the specific structures which we are dealing with here in this conference, will be enough to ring bells, if there are any bells to be ringed. Well, sorry about that. Okay, if you have any quantile and you take a left-sided element M and you take the F segment, so all the elements above that, then you have this very simple property which says that the closure operator that sends each quantile element to B joint M is a nucleus of left Q modules. And therefore, this F segment is a left Q module and it's a quotient of the whole quantile. As an example, if you take a ring R and a left ideal J, of course the quotient is a left R module, and this precisely corresponds to the F segment of J. So this this up segment here is isomorphic as well as a lattice, we know that, to the subgroups of R over J, but now this, it is also true that it's isomorphic as a module over this quantile sub ABR. So for C-star algebras, this is one of the key constructions which is going to be used. So what we do is, for each maximal left ideal, you take this up segment, and there's a lot of structure in it. So for one thing, it is a Hilbert space with its inner product given by the pure state, which corresponds to this maximal ideal, because there's this bijective correspondence between the pure states and the maximal ideals in C-star algebra. And therefore, this lattice of closed subspaces of the space A over M is just a lattice of projections of the Hilbert space, and therefore it's orthocomplemented. But this orthogonality relation can be defined directly on the up segment. What you do is you say that two subspaces are orthogonal if and only if this condition holds, because this is precisely the kernel of the pure state. So we can determine this structure of an orthocomplemented sublattice directly from the quantile without knowing anything about the algebra. And what's more, from this lattice, you can recover completely the Hilbert space. One way of doing that is to say the Hilbert space is L2 of X, where X is any maximal pairwise orthogonal set of atoms of the lattice. This determines the Hilbert dimension, therefore the whole Hilbert space. Now, one thing which I didn't have any hope of being able to explain here is that also the action on the Hilbert space is determined from the F segment. This follows from some results of Mulvey and Pelletier in a recent paper in JP8A. Sorry, what is it that you don't see? Oh, okay, I'm sorry about that. Okay. Got to become left-sided. Right. So from their results, it follows that these modules A over M and A over M prime are isometrically isomorphic if and only if the F segments are isomorphic as Q of A modules. So we can choose, and well, there's choice here, we can choose one maximal ideal per such Hilbert space. So for each simple module of the algebra, we can choose one maximal ideal. And then the algebra is going to be a sub-C-star algebra of this product for all these maximal ideals of these C-star algebras, which are of the bounded operators on each Hilbert space. Right, so now we have, well, the clay onto which the algebra is going to be defined, but we still have to know which of these elements are in the C-star algebra. Now, we define these two things. In each B of HM, we say that a projection of the C-star algebra is open if its kernel, when you copy it to the up segment, is given by an annihilator of some element of the quantile. And you say that a projection in this whole C-star algebra is open if all of its components are open. Now, the remarking result of 1971 of Giles and Coomer is that knowing this algebra here, which is actually a four-Neyman algebra, and knowing this lattice of open projections, so-called open projections, you do determine a sub-algebra of this, which is just the original C-star algebra A. And, well, their paper was called the non-commutative generalization of topology, and it really is a nice generalization in a certain sense. So what we have is, let me cover this for a while. If you look at the commutative case and you take some C-star algebra of continuous functions on a space X, the projections, and B is the bounded functions on X, then the projections are just the characteristic functions of subsets of X. Therefore, they're just, well, subsets of X. Well, from these subsets and the opens you do, you know how to define when a function is continuous. Now, this situation here is just the same thing. You have a C-star algebra A embedded into this product of von Neumann algebras. You define open projections, and then you say that something is an A if and only if it is continuous in a certain sense, which is precisely analogous to continuity in the usual topological sense. I'm not sure it's really relevant to say what it is, but I think it doesn't hurt. So what you do is you take any element in the von Neumann algebra B, take its spectral representation, and say that B is continuous if for all the open intervals or open subsets of the reals, this projection here is open. Therefore, an element is open when it sends, well, its inverse image sends opens to opens, now in a non-commutative setting. And any element B is continuous if it's obtained from the self-adjoint elements in the usual way. Right, well, this is very nice in a way, but the construction of the algebra from the quantile is a bit strange, and if one asks how functorial this is, it's totally not obvious, and that's the second part of what I wanted to say. So ultimately, we'd like to obtain an equivalence of categories, and it's not obvious that we're going to get that. So the first bad result is that this functor is certainly not an equivalence. In fact, it doesn't have any adjoints of any kind, and this is not a deep result. It's really pretty obvious. For instance, well, we just show that it doesn't preserve products, therefore it doesn't have a left adjoint. And to do this, we just have to use algebras as simple as C and C squared. To show that it doesn't preserve coproducts, the situation is about as simple as that. Just use, again, C squared and use the coproduct of that, and it's fairly simple to show that the quantile of C squared plus C squared is not isomorphic to the sum of these two quantiles. Right, so some different kind of idea is necessary, and what we tried to do at a certain point in joint work with David Krummel and Joanne Pelletier and Jirka Vosicki was to start by looking at how much Q of A is actually a space. Well, in order to know what a space is, one first defines what the points are. And in this case, the point of a quantile is always going to be some kind of module on the quantile. There are various proposals in the literature, and in this talk I will use this one, which in the case that we are studying is equivalent to one of Mauve and Pelletier. So a point is a left module, which is cyclic, which has a generator whose annihilator in the quantile is a maximal left-sided element, and which is involutive in the sense that the orthogonality relation and the involution of the quantile are related by this expression. When we do this, the points are always isomorphic to modules, the up segments of that form. And this is actually a characterization theorem, which is also in the paper of Mauve and Pelletier, which I mentioned a while ago. Right. Now, once a notion of point is fixed, we say that a quantile is spatial if it has enough points. There are two ways of doing this, which have been proposed. One of them is the most obvious one, and another one says that we just have to distinguish elements on the right side. That's due to Mauve and Pelletier. According to that, the quantile Q of A is always a space, but, well, that doesn't change the previous situation, so we're going to try the first one. And the first one is remarkable in the sense that if you take Q of A in the case that A is commutative and take the spatialization of that, then you obtain precisely the locale of closed ideals of the algebra. So when you spatialize something commutative, you get a locale. And in a way, this seems to be quite nice. However, there are various problems associated with it because the spatialization has bad functorial properties. The first problem is that these spatialization quotients do not form a natural transformation. so you cannot talk about a spatial reflection of a quantile because it just isn't a reflection. The proof is quite simple again. Just consider the homomorphism of the sister algebras, the embedding of C squared into the 2x2 complex matrices. Then if you compute this pushout, where this is a spatialization of this quantile because it is commutative, the pushout must have a trivial quantile here. And therefore, the spatialization of this, however, is not trivial. Therefore, there is no hope of making the spatialization a natural transformation. So, but anyway, this result suggested something interesting, which is there some functor which would, well, preserve colimits so it would have a right adjoint, and which in the commutative case coincides with the localic spectrum? That's something else that we tried. Now, one result is that the category of compact regular locales is closed under colimits of quantiles. And this is true for various categories of quantiles, not just for the one we're considering. So it's quite a robust result. And as a consequence of that, if S is a functor that preserves colimits from unital Cesar algebras to quantiles, and which coincides with the localic spectrum for commutative Cesar algebras, then the spectrum of the algebra is just locale of closed ideals of the commutative reflection of the algebra. Now, this follows from the previous lemma and from the fact that for Cesar algebras, any algebra is a colimit of commutative ones. So what's the situation here? So this is bad in a way, because it says that such a spectrum is totally uninformative for most non-commutative algebras. So you take any simple algebra and the spectrum is just trivial. And in a way this suggests that all these attempts to make point-free topology non-commutative are a bit strange, and there's a price to pay for that. Either that, or we're taking some wrong point of view and some new ideas needed. And that's where I'd like to stop. Thank you very much.